From the land to Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of June, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will be here, too, to take a look at the weather forecast. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Mike Zuzlo at GlobalComResearch.com now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Happy Friday to you, Mike.
I think it's a happy Friday, Todd.
Yeah, well, it is. You know why it is a happy Friday? Because the weather's pretty decent today, really very nice, and it's the end of the week.
Well, and my heart goes out to all those people that have had tornadoes in the Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. And on these last couple, 3 weeks, it's been a really tough cycle this spring.
Indeed it has, and hopefully we'll be done with that kind of weather for a while. Can you take a look back at this week for me in the marketplace? Honestly, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it really was. And I think when you look at the report from the USDA and you look at this on-again, off-again U.S.-Iran peace deal, what is astounding to me in the analysis that I do is that soft red wheat actually closed higher for the week this week on Friday, and corn actually came within a half a penny of closing higher on the week when it made its high of around 417. And that was after filling a weekly chart gap down around 408. So we had a very wild swing in Thursday night and Friday's price action in corn. And I think the wheat and corn could have done a lot better had it not been for the 3% correction in the crude oil market. And the reason I say that is because it's familiar territory that you and I cover almost every week, Todd. That crude oil wheat correlation on a 4-week basis is still running amazingly with all these different fundamentals, all these different factors. Seemingly, those two are still running at a positive 75% relationship. So they are still, to me, very much in charge of the commodity complex as a whole. And the close this week could have been a lot worse, given some of the statistics and fundamentals that USDA kind of threw at us.
Given the on-again, off-again comment, USDA's WASDE report, which dropped the season's average cash price for wheat by 50 cents, which is a big number.
Big drop.
From $6.50 to $6. Do you think wheat will continue to move lower, or is the 580 kind of level we're at something that your expectation is that they'll just trade there?
Yeah, I wouldn't want the weekly lows to be taken out at this stage going all the way into August at this stage of the game. And this is because the trade has tried to play and has so far been successful in playing this year very much like last year, and in the corn especially, and to the lesser degree the soybeans and wheat. You know, we were able to go lower all the way into the later part of July, early part of August. In fact, December corn's done that the last 2 years in a row, and I think they're trying to work the fundamentals as the same or similar as last year, and I see that completely wrong and opposite. And I will say that the world corn stocks to use ratios at a 4-year low, soybeans at a 4-year high. If wheat is going to go below 585, 570 area, I would suspect that it's going to be on a renewed leg to the downside in the soybeans, because we did see that cut in old crop soybeans with the exports. But again, that was offset by improved biofuels. And so that's where the market kind of sits, is we're in very much equilibrium in the soybeans. But I still think there's some people out there maybe a little bit nervous about the export front for the U.S. soybean crop.
I was going to ask why, but clearly because of the export front.
Yeah.
How much potential is there for Brazil and Argentina, given the tax situation and the very good crops that they've had in both of those countries, to be really competitive on the open marketplace?
Yeah, I think the world ethanol demand is much better, and the U.S. ethanol demand is much better than what USDA is projecting, especially for 25-26, because we would have looked a lot tighter in ending stocks had they not cut the ethanol by the same amount. They're essentially saying we're going to be up about 2.5% on ethanol crush, but yet our exports are up 13% year to date. Our unleaded gas price is a dollar higher than it was a year ago. Ethanol is about E85, I should say, is about 80-90 cents cheaper than regular unleaded, and ethanol stocks here in this country are near 2026 lows. So to answer your question, I continue to think that the South Americans will utilize more domestic corn for energy and livestock, and that opens up the outside markets or exports more for the soybeans at this stage.
Yeah, so you do believe that they'll be competitive on the open marketplace. Does that push soybeans lower?
I think they're the leader to the downside. I mean, I think a 60 to 80 cent move back lower would get us back to the 2026 lows, and look at where corn and wheat were before the report. They've already gone through those and, tested those, so or gone through them. And so it wouldn't be surprising to me to see the beans play catch up to the wheat and the corn if we were going to go lower. I'm inclined to think that the trade has thought that they've rationed demand. They've rationed demand too much, and they really haven't ration demand at all in practicality. So I think we need to add premium into this market, and that's why I think it's so much different than last year at this time.
Okay, so well, you think you need to add premium to market? Why again? Why would we want to do that?
Well, one would be because of the tight wheat stocks, and this is all the way across the northern hemisphere. I mean, if you look back at the May report, the USDA made a big deal of major exporters around the world are going to have tighter stocks in wheat. And as I said, stocks to use in corn is at a 4-year low right now globally. And the third reason would be the ethanol demand and the export demand. I think, in practicality terms, based upon what I'm seeing on spot corn basis in some parts of the country, we're a lot tighter than what the balance sheet would suggest.
Okay, good. I was thinking that you were thinking that this market might drift lower, unless there is a weather premium into, I don't know, I thought early August, and maybe there would be a preseason bounce before we got into the harvest, but clearly not what your thoughts are at this point. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I think the soybeans are the leader to the downside if the wheat and the corn don't bottom. The big thing with the weather is we don't have weather issues except heat waves to look forward to in the East Coast. I think it's really going to be a few months down the road. We're going to be looking at Australia, India, Southeast Asia, if we really do have, as the Japanese say, Godzilla El Nino.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalCalmResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Medium. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. In today's agricultural news, following severe storms and tornadoes in Illinois, the United States Department of Agriculture has issued a bulletin outlining available disaster recovery resources for affected agricultural producers. The agency advises farmers to comprehensively document all damages and losses, retain receipts related to cleanup and repairs, contact crop insurance agents promptly, and consult their local USDA service center prior to initiating major recovery operations. A variety of programs are available to assist with livestock and crop losses, farmland rehabilitation, and emergency loans. Producers are directed to farmers.gov for further information and can access specific resources, including the Disaster Assistance Discovery Tool, the Disaster at a Glance Fact Sheet, the Loan Assistance Tool, and the Natural Disasters and Crop Insurance Fact Sheets. We'll stay in Illinois for the moment, where officials from Rural King have broken ground on a new headquarters in Mattoon. Abigail Botar from Illinois Public Media has more on the reinvestment the company is making in its hometown.
Rural King was founded in Mattoon in 1960 and has grown to 150 locations in multiple states. The new Store Support Center campus will create 100 new jobs in Mattoon. The $75 million project will house company leadership and will be the new location of the company's flagship store. The project will also include an event center that will be available for community use. The project has received support from the state's Economic Development for a Growing Economy Tax Credit Program, and the Illinois Department of Transportation is working with the city of Mattoon to provide grant funding to build access to the new campus. Rural King currently employs 700 people across central Illinois. I'm Abigail Botar, IPM News.
And finally, just a quick reminder that June 17th, next Wednesday, University of Illinois Extension will hold another field day. This one at the Dudley Smith Farm, that's near Paynham. Faculty and researchers from the U of I will be on hand to discuss issues surrounding nutrients, including how to handle high fertilizer prices while mitigating nutrient loss. Travis Mateer organizes the event and says the day will be a unique opportunity for the state's farmers.
We're going to do a guided tour. And so it'll be an opportunity for folks to come. And you're going to see actually collecting the measures. You're going to kind of see the behind the scenes of the research that happens there. And then just have that opportunity to be face-to-face, one-on-one, boots-to-boots with our researchers and have those conversations firsthand.
For more information, search Google for the June 17th Dudley Smith Farm Field Day and Illinois Extension, or visit our website at willag.org and look in the calendar of events. You'll find that on the 17th, that's next Wednesday, and then the following Thursday, the 24th of June, you'll also find the Weed Science Field Day and information on it. Check it all out at willag.org. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, let's take some time now to look at the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here from Nutrien Ag Solutions in Dagrable. Hi, Eric. Thanks much for being with us. I don't know whether you've been in your yard yet after last night's wind and rainfall, but I spent the whole morning cleaning up limbs and not just small ones. So it was kind of interesting. And I think what I want to know is this rain in June has been really good for our crop. Does it indicate anything going forward? And can you talk to me about just what the rainfall's been like across the whole of the Corn Belt?
Yeah, well, so Todd, I have a 13-year-old boy at home, so I've not been in my yard, but he's been cleaning it up. It's kind of an arrangement we have during summer. But not to make light of last night's severe weather, but it did a lot of damage across the Midwest, across Illinois, across the whole state. In fact, we had multiple tornado reports out of this. We're still investigating some of the damage across parts of Champaign-Urbana. Likely going to be tornadoes confirmed in their development. In fact, Andrew Pritchard, I called him last night, and he's been without power since then, and he's had to get battery back, or not a battery backup, but a generator to keep his sump pump running. And so there you go. It was a pretty rough night, and we had winds that came across the area, 55 to 75 miles an hour, did a lot of damage. But Todd, while that Boeco came through, it put rain down, and we have had rain in the system, hitting our fields now for better than a week, some places across the state picking up several inches of rain. And this follows what had been a degradation in the drought monitor across the northern part of the state, where it was just so incredibly dry. And now we've had, Todd, there were 5 rounds of rain in northern Illinois in the last 2 days. So it's huge. And your second part of your question is what I want to focus on. The last few weeks, we've discussed how important June soil moisture is in predicting July heat. And as it stands right now, the soil moisture increases we've seen tilt us toward the odds of having less extreme heat in the month of July. Doesn't mean we won't get hot at times during July, but just kind of the massive yield robbing problematic heat is being reduced by the fact that we built up soil moisture now. And I think next week's drought monitor, you'll have to talk to Trent too, but I imagine they're going to be looking for class improvements because of some of the recent storms. And by the way, we're not even done. We got more rain coming later this weekend with chances of storms, probably Saturday night into Sunday morning. At least is the current timing I've been investigating coming through. So enjoy the beautiful weather today. There's still another chance of storms coming through.
And then next week is cooler than this past week, correct?
Yeah, it is. In fact, over the next 7 days, we're going to be on average about 3.5 degrees cooler than normal. All the heat is going to go into the western states, where we're going to be seeing easily triple digit heat up through the west coast United States. Very, very hot. But we're getting the benefit of that, northerly flow and some cooler conditions here for a while. And the big question we're going to ask, Todd, is can we get that to stick around into the month of July?
Can we?
You know, most signs are pointing that way. Most of the signals we use in June to say if July is going to be hot and problematic on the crop are not there. The North Pacific is warming. We have an El Nino that's building. We've got adequate soil moisture now. And those are the key indicators. So I unless, you know, the bottom falls out of this and we have a low probability event taking shape in July to build a big ridge, I don't see it just yet. But then again, there's still more time in June to watch disaster unfold if it will.
So if it unfolds as you're thinking, June, July, really pretty good for the corn crop in particular, gets us through pollination. 93 degrees is kind of the area, or has been, where we think about if we're above that actual air temperature, we have a problem with pollination and, of course, rainfall as well. But to this point, sounds pretty decent for that. Anything longer term that we can think about through August and the soybean crop?
Well, let's think about overnight low temperatures and also more rain. So if we do like we did a year ago and keep it humid, so humid, we will bump up our overnight lows, which can start to stress the crop as well. So you mentioned 93 degrees. We also have to think about 73 degrees, right? You get above that overnight, several nights in a row, we've really significantly stressed the crop when it needs to be basically, for lack of a better term, resting. It just continues to transpire water. So on top of that, if we continue to stay wetter, which I still see more chances of storms in our near-term future for us, we all of a sudden have to start talking about, you know, fungal pressures and disease pressure that comes from having more extended number of hours of leaf wetness. But into August, I don't think I have that clear of a picture yet of August. I need to see where the Bermuda High and Pacific High develop at that point. And if we start baking the Western United States in July, the likelihood of us having problems in August begins to decrease. I will tell you this, though, Todd, given the strength of this El Nino coming in, and NOAA just came out and they've got a 100% chance of El Nino all the way through winter, which is a bold statement by them. The likelihood of us having a more mild but also wetter fall is in the cards, which could tighten up not only our harvest but our fall application windows. And then it will likely mean a more mild but also wetter winter. And that's important to consider as we go forward, because we've not had that as of late, certainly not last winter.
Is that the indication of the Godzilla El Nino? I think we've been using that. Super El Nino. Is it duration, strength, or combination of which has caused that term to be passed around?
It's mainly the strength, not necessarily the duration, although this El Nino's come on early, but it is likely going to be, and I think the El Nino being forecast by the National Weather Service supports this, there's a high probability of us being in historic temperatures over the equatorial Pacific where the El Nino happens. Probably getting up there 3 degrees above average, maybe even more. And yeah, and NOAA was aggressive. Now you're going, well, why is NOAA just now talking about this when other meteorologists, myself included, have been talking about it for months? NOAA is very, very structured in how they release these reports, and they wait until they get past a very well-known spring predictability barrier, which we're now past, before they make their statements. And it's very measured, that's on purpose, and I applaud NOAA for doing that. But they've now confirmed what all the rest of us have been concerned about, and yeah, it's going to be a big El Nino, and it's going to be a big effect for us come August, September, October, and beyond. I don't think it's a big effect right now for June into July.
Yay for all of you, because it's not 95% confirms, it's a 100% confirmed.
Yes, it's there. It's big.
Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds good, Todd. Thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agable joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILL.org.